Australia won't commit to an international pledge to cut methane emissions by 30% this decade, but exactly how that decision was reached has highlighted continued tensions in the coalition. The Deputy Prime Minister and leader of the Nationals, Barnaby Joyce, this morning claimed the decision not to sign up was part of a deal to secure the Nationals' support for the net zero plan by 2050.
If we hadn't got these insurance policies in place, there would be farmers today who'd be absolutely melting the phones down, because they'd be saying, that is my livelihood. But if it wasn't for the prudent oversight by the Nationals, if we'd stood aside from the process, we would open ourselves up for issues such as this.
But that was refuted by the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, who says it was never the plan.
That's actually a bipartisan position, and we've made that very clear, and that's been reported today. We've also said very clearly that under our plan, we won't be putting any mandates on farmers. We won't be targeting them in any way. I've never had any plans to sign up to that.
Simon Birmingham is the finance minister and leader of the government in the Senate. I spoke to him a short time ago and started by asking why the Prime Minister and his deputy had different views.
It's certainly not the government's intention to make that pledge, which in the short term could be quite detrimental.
Wait, was it meant to be their pledge and then he stopped it with the Nationals?
Look, I think we listen to the National Party, to the Liberal Party's rural and regional MPs, and this is just a normal part of government engagement in that sense, listening to its backbench. We would have always recognised the fact that this particular pledge presents difficulties for a country like Australia, given the nature of our farming sector, and that what we need to do is precisely what we've outlined this week, work to achieve net zero, and as part of that, address the methane challenges by investing in technology, particularly around types of new feedstock opportunities that are available, and that's there detailed as one of the things in the plan released this week.
Minister, can voters have confidence in the strength of the coalition if there's confusion over this policy? I mean, that's two different things we've heard from the Prime Minister and the Deputy Prime Minister.
People should have absolute confidence, Patricia, in a few things. Firstly, that Australia's emissions continue to go down.
Not the question I asked. I was talking about the change in
I'm coming to the policy and the plan. So they should have confidence Australia's emissions are going down, have gone down by 20% more than since 2005, which is in excess of many countries, are actually on track to meet and beat our 2030 targets, as I said, and that there's a detailed plan dealing with all of the different climate change gases in terms of what we need to tackle to achieve net zero as a country by 2050. And that's what we negotiated through.
Are you comfortable that Australia is going to Glasgow without more ambitious 2030 targets?
I think what you do, what you achieve is what matters most. And so we're going to Glasgow able to demonstrate that Australia made commitments at the time that those commitments were initially due, and that we are on track not just to beat those commitments, but to comfortably beat them. And so I think that is a very strong demonstration to the world of how seriously Australia is investing in tackling climate change, are making changes across our nation, and will continue to do so.
Can you explain to me, what's the difference between an update and a pledge on this 35%?
Well, the commitment under the Paris Agreement, there's a detailed, nationally determined commitment process that you go to, and Australia will be updating its NDC as part of that. There are also some longer-term commitments that are outlined as part of the structure that the Paris Agreement has countries engage in, and Australia will be making one of those longer-term commitments in terms of the net zero commitment by 2050.
Okay, but why not make this 35% sort of a nationally determined pledge?
So we are as part of our updated NDC outlining indeed that we made a commitment and how we are tracking against that commitment, which is that we're tracking extraordinarily well to meet and beat that commitment.
So is that 35% then a pledge?
It's showing what Australia is doing.
And
it's showing reality, Patricia.
That's the reality, and we want that to be the reality.
Reality is better than a pledge.
So it's not a pledge.
Well, I think reality, if it's a game of poker, Patricia, reality trumps a pledge.
Okay. Why not make it a pledge then too?
Pledge we're making, which is driving this reality, and it's the really important part of the pledge. It's the pledge that we're investing some $20 billion of public money driving some further $60 billion plus of private money across the years to 2030 into the technologies that are enabling us to achieve lower emissions and will enable the rest of the world to achieve lower emissions.
Okay, why didn't Treasury model your plan?
Well, the department responsible for emissions reduction modelled the plan.
Doesn't it make sense, though, that Treasury would do that kind of work?
Well, when we want health modelling, we ask the health department to do it. When we want modelling in relation to emissions reduction, the Department of Industry, who are responsible for the emissions reduction policy, they're the ones that produce the very transparent updates in relation to Australia's emissions reduction activities. They're the ones who produce quite detailed data reports on our emissions profile as a nation, and they're the ones who've done the modelling.
When are we going to get the modelling that's been done?
We'll get the modelling released over the next couple of weeks, as the PM said.
Minister, I want to talk about voter ID. It's a very contentious issue. Why is the government seeking to require voters to show ID when the Electoral Commission has not asked for that power?
It's about confidence in our electoral systems. We've had recommendations from the Parliamentary Committee on Electoral Matters from the three last elections in a row, proposing that the Parliament should do this and that we should have these sorts of measures that are quite commonplace across Europe, across Canada, across many parts of the world that have voter ID provisions in place. Sadly, in this day and age, conspiracy theories run ever more rampant on the internet about electoral systems. And this is a measure that can increase people's confidence in the integrity of the electoral system. But I do want to reassure everyone that this is a very light touch measure made as simple as possible that ensures that it's both physical or electronic ID. It's a whole variety of different forms of ID, and that there are safeguards there to ensure that declaration votes can still be provided by somebody who may not have the ID in place, or indeed that another individual with ID can vouch for somebody who may not have it.
But Minister, do you concede that this will make it more difficult for people in some risky groups, people fleeing domestic violence, the homeless, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, people who are quite disenfranchised from voting? Aren't you just creating a roadblock to people being able to exercise their democratic right?
No, I don't think that's the case, Patricia, and it's why those safeguards I referenced there are in place in terms of the legislation. And indeed, if we look at one of the lived examples of this in Queensland, where I think it was the 2015 Queensland election, they had voter ID laws in place, and the turnout, the participation in that 2015 Queensland election was actually at a greater level than the subsequent election where those laws had been abolished by a change of government. So you can actually see that when they're applied in the right way, they in no way dampen participation. In fact, for some people who have English language barriers or the like, being able to present their ID at the counter to show their name, to show their address, to do all of those different things is perhaps a more easy way of communicating than answering the questions that we currently require electoral officials to ask people.
Pauline Hanson says the voter identification legislation was a condition of her support for another vote. Is that true?
I'm not aware of that being the case, but I am certainly aware, as I said, that the Joint Standing Committee on Electoral Matters recommended this action be taken after the 2013, the 2016 and the 2019
elections.
But if
she says it was a condition, like she said that, is she not saying the truth?
Look, as I say, I'm not aware of...
But you would be aware, because you're the leader of the government in the Senate. You would have to know, wouldn't you?
Not necessarily. Pauline has discussions with most ministers about different bills and issues. It may be that she proposed this as a potential amendment to other pieces of electoral legislation. And as I say, it's certainly something the government was already looking at responding to in relation to those parliamentary committee reports that we'd received.
Okay, I know it was Ben Morton, I think, that she was just looking at the story that's been published that did that negotiation with her. So you're saying it would have happened regardless because you believe in it anyway. Is that what you're saying?
It's an issue that has been working through government processes for some time, particularly as a response to that parliamentary committee report.
Simon Birmingham is the finance minister. This is RN Drive 0418 226 576 is the text line.